Thisbe stepped closer to me, and I prayed the blow would come. The Marquis de Sade was from the 18th century too, weren't they? You'll also need this, I continued, letting them see a small envelope in my hand. It's a more powerful memory eraser than the one you use at home, Thisbe. Very safe, no side effects. Blank 70 minutes thereabouts. You can't just go now with what you've seen, but if you both take this in the car on your way away from here, then all this will never have happened. I'll take care of the rest. I waited, counting my breaths and hoping I could count on Thisbe to do just the right amount of damage. I waited. Surely she would strike. Carlyle would not, of course. The Sensei had crossed Jehovah's threshold. He stood no longer in the 24th century, but in his. Carlyle, like Voltaire, will not trade knowledge for ignorance, not for all the happiness in the world. Thisbe, though. The threat of the Marquis might scare off even such a creature as Thisbe. I waited. I thought you said we didn't have time to dawdle, Mycroft, she said, at last her voice soft. Which way to Madame? And her answers. I did not have the heart to look at them. This way. I led them to a landing halfway up the stairs toward the inscription, then turned to a secondary stairwell on the right. A dainty flight of steps took us to a door paneled with pastoral scenes of courting gentry, and a vestibule beyond with cherubs flirting in a painted sky. I don't intend to leave your sides at any time, but just in case I can't avoid it, a few survival rules. Never allow yourself to be taken to a room where there is not at least one fully clothed woman, by which I mean someone dressed in female clothes, regardless of anatomy. The men here have to behave themselves when there are women present. Second, avoid male-clothed residents wearing black. It is Dominic's privilege to allow them to wear black, so the more black they wear, the more Dominic likes them, which is usually a danger signal. You forget never turn off your tracker, Thisbe added, doubtless shooting a glare at the cousin, though I did not look to see. I shook my head, the habit's fabric rough against my neck. They're masters of this. They'd get you to take it off. If they tried, they could even get you, Thisbe, to take it off. I looked to Carlyle. I know when to surrender. I was lying before about that stuff I said the Chevalier's men would do to you. I was trying to scare you away. This place isn't like that. The Chevalier wouldn't have harmed you. He would never break his word to Sister Eloise. And you're right that they couldn't rape and kidnap people without getting caught. They wouldn't, either. It's uncivilized. You're standing in the bubble of the 18th century now. They pride themselves on being more civilized than the 25th. What would they have done to me, then? He asked after a pause. They would have kept bullying you a bit. Then one would have played protector, stepping into your rescue. Most cousins love that. Your rescuer would have taken you aside and been the most tender and charismatic person you'd ever met, playing on your fear and gratitude while the others placed bets on whether or not you'd consent. My money, if I had any, says you would have consented. But if you refused, they'd just have sent you packing with a tender warning to be good from now on, and curiosity would have had you back here within the day. I wouldn't have consented, he insisted predictably. I'm not that stupid, the universal euphemism for I'm not that easy. And even if I were, I don't like boys. I shook my head. That's no impediment to them. Madame raised gentlemen of both sexes. What would they have done with me? Thisbe cut in. There was no fear in her voice, just collegial curiosity, as when a Western fencing master steps into an Eastern dojo and detachedly admires a kindred art too different to be called competitor. Once they determined you were a person of influence, they would have treated you very well and done all in their power to tempt you into joining. You might like the club, actually, though it does tend to spoil your appetite for any other kind of sex. I knocked twice on the inner door, painted with garlands almost moist enough to seem real. It's Mycroft, madame. I've brought the guests. Just a moment. In those last breaths, I wondered if they would change their minds now, if wise, cold Thisbe would seize a vase from the Pietra Dura sideboard and strike and run at last. I stood just in front of her to make it easy. It was probably impossible for them to make it out from here, but hope is always ready to stifle reason, even in me. Only Carlyle spoke. Mycroft, you didn't answer before when I asked if you knew J.E.D.D. Mason's full name. Jehovah Epicurus Donatien Darway Mason. I always stumble somewhere in that name, as if part of me fears what would happen if I recited the full, unbroken invocation. Come in. Chapter the 26th. Madame Darway. Come in. I know the trick to opening that door without it squeaking. Many do. False windows on the four walls of the chamber showed the seasons. Spring blossoms, summer peaches drowning in emerald leaves, harvest wheat and grapes, ice-dusted evergreens, all painted, with painted birds and animals playing in the fields. There were painted children, too, life-sized, so they seemed to stand with the viewer in the room, leaning out through the false windows, trying to catch birds, pluck fruit, sporting as seasons demanded, snowballs in winter, flirting in spring. The furnishings were delicate to the point of fragility. Gilded candelabra, fine as twining vines, couches on slender legs which curved like swan's necks, tables with dainty seats ready for card players, and a harpsichord, petite, like the runt of a litter of pianos. Did you expect a throne room, reader? Never. Madame is no queen, but a hostess, and rules none but the guests in her salon. Madame, allow me to present Mademoiselle Thisbe Sanier of the Sanier Weeks Boothbash and the Reverend Dr. Carlyle Foster, a fellow of the Sensei's conclave and protege of Her Holiness Conclave Head Julia Doria Pamphili. Madame curtsied her greeting. No simple gesture, but a grand process, as the heights of her wig, its white peaks crowned with ruffles and dyed feathers, dipped and rose like the crags around Olympus, nodding their respect to passing gods. Her gown today was midnight blue, open in the front over an inner gown of rosy salmon laced with gold, with a wide framework underneath which made the skirt swell to more than thrice the lady's width, as if she waded in her own private ocean. She wore gems on her fingers, her wrists, at her throat, not distracting, but serving her body as gems should, their glitter luring one to notice the curve of an arm or the slope of a tender breast. The face that stared back at the new arrivals was a painting, the precise, stylized ideal which stares from every flattering portrait that ever graced a palace wall in the age when men's portraits showed distinct features and character, but ladies were homogenized into one doll-perfect face. It really was all paint. The heavy makeup of the period, whose whites and rouges did not let a single hint of skin peek through. Her age? She seems more a time-stopped goddess than a woman whom the count of years could touch. And sometimes I wish our anti-aging drugs were less powerful, so one might see what greater transformations maturity had planned for such a beauty. It is not polite to discuss a lady's age, so I shall say only that, were all the seven leaders of our world assembled in one room, Madame the Eighth, only Headmaster Faust would recall more of history than she. Mademoiselle Thisbe, Dr. Carlyle, I continued, may I present Madame Darway, Also His Grace Ganymede Jean-Louis de Lettremouille, Duc de Toile, Prince de Talmont, President of the Humanists, and His Excellency Chief Director Hotaka Ando Mitsubishi. I assure you, reader, the pair beside me were no less startled by Madame's illustrious company than you are. Golden Ganymede lounged against the summer wall, his diamond sparkle finally in a setting as brilliant as itself. Across the room from him stood Director Ando, dignified, but with something of the harried look of a man who has just rushed to replace his pants. Actually, the director was not wearing pants, but pleated hakama, whose belts and knots require much more time and skill than trousers. For at Madame's, he exercises the option of wearing the 18th-century period costume of his own country, marking himself a foreign dignitary among so many Parisians. Ganymede, of course, always dresses the same, but here it feels normal. "Pleased to meet you, Madame." Enterprising Thisbe drew the folds of her cloak up into a makeshift curtsy. "The pleasure is mine, my dear." Madame approached and embraced Thisbe like a sister, the pinkish tint of her forearms set off by the long, trailing ruffles of salmon lace which framed her half-length sleeves. "It's high time one of your household came to visit mine. I'm sorry if your initial reception was a bit rough, but the back door is not the best entrance for new guests." Thisbe accepted Madame's jasmine-scented kisses on both cheeks. "But more interesting," she offered. Madame's smile liked that. "I suppose so. And dear Dr. Carlyle, please sit. From what I've heard, you've had a very tiring few days encountering Dominic and Mycroft and my son." Before Carlyle saw it coming, Madame had kissed the cousin and swept him over to a daybed, where she plopped him down and settled down beside him, her vast skirts filling the space between the sensaire and curving couch arm as blankets fill a cradle. "Yes," Carlyle confessed to the warmth of her inviting smile, "it's been awkward." "Of course it has, of course it has, and for my part in it, I'm very sorry. Sit, everyone, sit, sit." She gestured Thisbe to a vacant love seat opposite. "And thou too, Mycroft. Thou art the very picture of exhaustion. Take the corner stool before thou fallest down." I bowed. "Thank you, Madame." "Good. All settled. Now how can we help you, good Dr. Foster?" Madame glanced at the president and director, who pulled up ibis-slim chairs to flank her and the sensaire, like family gathered around a troubled child. "You're concerned about my son?" she asked. Carlyle's tongue faltered beneath the president and chief director's stares. "Duke and chief director, I should say. In this house, Ganymede is far more duke than president." "Come, speak your mind," Madame chide. "We're all friends here, whatever we may be outside. You have worries?" Thisbe spoke up, her smile growing more tickled is the word. "Are you J.E.D.D. Mason's mother?" "I am Jehovah's mother, yes," Madame answered. Carlyle managed not to wince this time. "And you run this place?" "Yes." "Which is a brothel?" Madame chuckled at Carlyle's timidity. "You mustn't be scared of the word. I usually call it a gendered sex club. I offer archaic sex with old-fashioned gender-differentiated men and women. My clients like to seduce or be seduced and enjoy skirts and breeches rather than the neutered egalitarian copulation one gets outside nowadays. Whom did you meet on arrival? The Chevalier? Did you like him?" Carlyle swallowed hard. "So you don't do anything more extreme here?" Madame's laugh was indulgent as a nanny's. "I hope you don't think that badly of black laws. Though nearly impossible to spot among her skirt's flare, there was a black law hiveless sash about her hips. Our clients get quite enough of the thrill of the forbidden with gender." The cousin frowned. I'm surprised people find gendered costumes that exciting, frankly. Oh, my dear. She chuckled at his innocence.